Great. So welcome to our conference call. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this from the traditional territory of the Kwamlyn Dun First Nation and Tonkawatin Council. And it's great to see some new faces, both Nathan and Holly. I know I've talked to both of you a fair amount, but I've never actually seen you face to face. So it's nice to see your faces as well. And I'll let you introduce, we'll all do a round of introductions here. So this is RM102, and it's our second week of documentation to manage risk. And then after this advanced learning event, our next one is actually 4 weeks long, and so the next three are all 4 weeks long. So that's why there's fewer learning events in this certificate than the leadership certificate, is because of some of our learning events are a bit longer. It just gives you more time to work through the content and sort of work on things. So, hi, Melanie. We're just getting started. So I just started the recording, and we're going to do introductions in just a sec. So last week, we talked about documentation that related to participating in programs and people using your facilities. So this week, what we're going to look at is we're going to look at documentation or paperwork that you might use related to operations. That would be things like how you run your facilities, user agreements, checklists, things like that. And since documentation can prove that you're doing what you say you're doing, documentation for operations can include a whole range of things, and we'll look at some of those. In small communities, lots of paperwork isn't necessary, but when there's issues, you want to make sure you have things written down. So we're going to get into a round of introductions, but I also want to try a poll. I'm not totally convinced it's going to work, but I'm going to open it and start it, and it should pop up on your computer screen. And you just choose one answer to this. So let's see if it actually works. I don't know if it pops up for you or if you have to click the poll button. You can see it, Nathan? Okay. Just choose one answer to how much documentation do you use? So you can use way too much or almost none or somewhere in between those. And I'm just curious to see where people are at. So you should be able to see the results as people choose their answer. So go ahead and choose your answer, and then once we've seen that, we'll do a round of introductions. Well, that's good. So far, nobody said almost none. Two, three, four, five. So I see five out of a few people. So most people have answered. So you guys are in the middle. That's pretty good. You don't use way too much, which would be overwhelming. And you know that you need to use some because it's important. So that's great. Thanks for sharing your input on that. Let's do a round of introductions just because we've got some new people here. And then after we've done that, I'm just going to go around in the order that you joined the call. Actually, I'm going to go from east to west because Kumnathik and Nathan were on the call first. So I'll let them introduce it themselves. And what I'd like you to do is just share your name, what your role is, and the community that you're in. So we'll go from Kumnathik to Nathan, and then we'll go to NWT, which would be, I think we've lost Igor, so Holly, and then we'll go to the Yukon, and Igor is coming back in. So, okay, so Kumnathik, over to you. I've got your phone muted so I can unmute it. And maybe you can just tell us who you are, what your role is, and what community you're in.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Mangap Yangnathiel, and I am the new acting director for the municipality of Siglulik.
That's great. Thanks for joining us, and I'm glad it's working for you. It seems to be working with your phone and your computer screen, so perfect. Okay, over to Nathan. So we're working our way from north and east all the way back west. Oh, and actually, I did want to ask you guys a question just because I'm curious, and we'll come back to Kumnathik after Nathan. I'm curious what the temperature is today in your community. So if you can, I'll put that in the chat. If you can also tell me, you can put it in the chat, Kumanopic, if you want, but what the temperature is today in your community after you introduce yourself. So over to you, Nathan.
Hi, everyone. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, good. My name's Nathan Unnanout. I'm the recreation coordinator for Baker Lake Nunavut. Temperature right now is -4, but it's windy today, so the wind chill was -12. Lots of snow everywhere. Lots of rocks still. And I'm the coordinator. I do events for all of Baker Lake, for the elders, adults, youth. I run summer day camps, winter camps. I'm sending 15 kids to dance to Toronto again. Yeah, special events, stuff like that. Anything fun. Free trips for kids. It's always good.
That's great, Nathan. And Nathan took the leadership certificate last year, and I realize you do a lot for Baker Lake. You have a lot of activities going on, just like Kumanopic does in Iqaluit. And you're also on the board, right, for the Recreation Parks Association of Nunavut? Awesome. Kumanopic, just coming
back
to you.
Yeah, I just became vice president. Sorry.
Oh, you're the vice
president? I became the, what do you call it, vice president. I'm going to Iqaluit, though, in a couple of weeks to get the rec coordinator of the year. At least something.
Way to go. Oh, but Misa's clapping her hands with the world.
You're
getting the Coordinators of Year Award. That's awesome. Look at all the hand claps for you. Congratulations, Nathan. Hopefully you'll send us a picture or I'll ask Dawn for it. Thank you. And Kumanopic, it's only -5 in Iqaluit today, Nate. Wow, that's pretty warm, but a wind chill of -12. So a lot warmer in Nunavut than I would have expected for the end of October. Okay, so we're going to come around from NWT. We're going to head to, or sorry, from Nunavut, we're going to head to NWT. So let's go to Igor first, who's a bit further north, and then to Holly. So Igor, if you wanted, I did mute you, so if you want to unmute and introduce yourself and tell us the temperature for you today.
Thank you, Caroline. My name is Igor, and I live in Sulita, in the province, and I'm director of recreation here. And a few days ago, I'm also the Arctic Games regional coordinator for the Tartu region. And the temperature here is 0 degrees today, and it's warm, and it feels like spring.
Oh, wow. Things are weird in the world today. So.
Yeah.
Thanks, Igor, and congratulations on your new role.
Thank you.
Okay, and over to Holly.
Hi, my name is Holly. I am a recreation coordinator at Avens. I'm currently acting as supervisor until November 8th. And the temperature here today is -5, but it feels like -11 with light snow.
Oh, okay, so rather damp and chilly. And
yeah.
Holly, can you just tell everybody what Avens is? Because I don't know if anyone on the call might know.
Avens is the long-term care facility in Yellowknife. We have 3 different units. There's the manor and the 2 cottages.
And you have several people doing recreation, right?
Yeah, there's 3 full-time rec staff, and we did the recreation course a couple of years ago. Some of our staff haven't completed it yet because they're new to our team. But yeah.
That's great. Thanks. So I think it was 3 years ago Holly did her leadership certificate. So it was great to see you come back and visit us for the join us for the management one. So Holly will be joining all of you all the way through and then finishing up in September with the last learning event. So thanks for joining us, Holly. Okay, let's go over to the Yukon. I think furthest east would be Mel or Melanie. I don't know if you prefer Melanie or Mel. I see Mel on your screen, and so I'm going to unmute you. There we go. If you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us what the temperature is in your community today.
Yeah, I'm either way, running by Melanie or Mel. People prefer. I don't mind. And I'm a direct supervisor here in Watson Lake, and the temperature is -8. I've been told -12. It feels like colder than the Arctic North. Yeah. So, and we are super busy here right now preparing our Halloween events. 3 of them: fireworks, haunted house, and our Halloween dance on a weekend. And it's crazy right now. So I'm a little tired. Yeah.
I bet. Well, thanks for joining us. And next week is a week off from the learning events, and intentional because of Halloween. I know people do a lot of work for Halloween, so thank you. Okay, let's go over to Misha and then to Gian, and I think that will be everybody.
Hey, everyone. I think I've been on this call for a while, but I'm Misha. I am the owner of Summit Consulting. I was formerly working in CarMax, but now I'm kind of doing my own thing. So I know in CarMax, while I was moving, it was -13 over a couple of days ago, or was it yesterday? So quite cold. I'm in Whitehorse right now at my grandparents, so I think it's only -4. But I'll be moving to Marshall Lake back to my dry cabin. So I'm kind of all over the place, so stay tuned.
That's great. Thanks for joining us, Misha. And over to Gian.
Hey, everyone. Good morning. This is Gian. I'm the squash coach at the Whitehorse at Waters. Temperature here looks like -5 right now. Yesterday it was crazy cold. So today I'm just layered up like 3 days maybe. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And yes, it was -20 when I got up yesterday morning in Whitehorse. So it's pretty interesting. Usually Nunavut's way colder than we are at the other end of the country. So you guys still must not have a lot of ice happening there, I think. So hopefully sometime soon. So we're going to take about a half an hour of our call now to look at some of the content from this week. And I will be sort of using the slides from 20 to 29 if you have those open. I'm not going to share them because I think it just sometimes slows things down, but I also have something else to share with you that's going to help choose how we do our circle. So normally we do a circle and we go around in the same order each time, or we reverse the order or start somewhere else. So this time I have quite a few different questions. So I'm going to actually use something that picks one person, and you can say, no, I don't want to answer that question, I don't mind at all, and pass to the next person. Or you can choose to answer the question and listen to other people. And if you also aren't the one up on the hot seat for answering the question, you're more than welcome to pop your answer just in the chat, too. I don't want to put anybody on the spot. I just wanted to make it a little bit more fun today. So we'll have sort of one lucky person answer the question each time. They're not hard questions. So starting with slide 20, you can see that there are many different types of documentation that we use for operations. So this is different than the documentation or paperwork that we use for participation or participants. And so usually this type of documentation you prepare and you fill out, or you fill it out for a group that might be using your facility or something like that. So it's a different process to it. So I'm going to pop a question in, and I'm going to share my screen. So while you guys are all thinking about the answer to this question, I'm going to share my screen, and we'll choose someone to answer, or you can pop your answers in the chat. So my first question for you to think about is, what kind of documents did you use for employees and volunteers?
And if you're not somewhere where you're using documents right now, like Misha, for yourself, think about ones that have been used. They don't have to be ones that you use right now, but ones in general that might be used for employees and volunteers. And I'm going to show you how, I have to share my screen to show you how we're going to do this. So let's go like this. So you might see this little spinning wheel in the middle. So what this is this has like a little spinning thing with everybody's name. So while you're thinking of your answer, I'm going to spin it, and we'll see where it lands. So here we go. Hopefully you guys can see that okay on the screen. I'm not sure how well it works or not, but. So it's landed on Holly's name. So Holly, I guess we're putting you on the spot. You can choose to answer or not. It's totally up to you.
For employees and, well, for volunteers, we have an orientation package that asks all their information, what their availability is, and the volunteers have documents where they fill out what they did with each resident and what they did while they were there at the visit. Yeah. I know we have lots more, but that was all I could think of for now.
that's a really good start. If anyone else has any other documentation that you use with your employees and or your volunteers, go ahead and pop that in the chat. Some of the ones that I've listed, do we have any, we've got volunteer hours, that's right, so you might have a record of volunteer hours. Some people might have, like if you have a contract with somebody, and somebody's going to do a specific piece of work, you might identify what they're going to do and what you expect to see from that. So that could be a contract. And Kumnopic has a time card or a time sheet, so reporting time in and time out so you know how much to pay them. Great example of something that you would use with volunteers. So you can see some of the things that you might have might vary depending on what your role is. If you're a recreation director or coordinator, it might be your SAO that looks after some of these, or your CAO is what we call them in the Yukon. But there's different things that you would consider using. And if you use a lot of volunteers, you might have position descriptions and other things like that. So Gian has a contract, hours, criminal record check, community service hours that Nathan's just popped in there. So there's another example of that would be a type of documentation. You probably have to document that. So thank you for those ideas. And you can see a list of some of them on page or slide 21, but really there's it's hard to identify all of them because there are quite a few. So Nathan just mentioned criminal Gian did a criminal check, a criminal record check. So here's the next question, and I've taken Holly's name out of the spinning wheel. So that means Holly won't, your name won't pop up, but you can still think of the answer to the question. So here's my next question. So all of you guys think about this. When should you get a criminal or vulnerable sector check? And which one, if you use these, which one do you use? So while you're thinking of the answer, I'm just going to make sure I've got all the right names. And then let's spin the wheel and see who we come up with. Ah, Kumnopic, I don't know if you're able to unmute your phone and or if you can pass too. But when would you use a, or when would you get somebody to fill out a criminal or vulnerable sector check?
Or when you are hiring someone for a higher position.
Yeah, so when you're hiring them for a position, so do you always get those for people in your organization, like for your community? So not everybody would get them all the time. Oh, sorry, Kumnopic. Do you get a criminal record check for everybody that you hire? Okay, and Nathan Kamenopic's just popping in the chat, and Nathan said when you work with youth, so youth are considered vulnerable people, but also what other population, Nathan, might be considered vulnerable? Oh, and Holly's answered that question in the chat. So before someone starts with seniors, Kamenopic said that he will, with kids camp, get the criminal record check. Exactly. And Melanie said that everyone has to provide one. So you can see that there's different ranges. Some people might get a criminal record check when for anybody who's coming in, for any volunteers. Somebody might use a vulnerable sector check if you're working with children, or with elders is the other one that you might use. This is explained a little bit more on slide 22. And if you're taking a look at it, the vulnerable sector check does a little bit more than a criminal record check. So a vulnerable sector check also looks for a record of suspensions or pardons as well. So it goes a little bit deeper than what a criminal record check does. So just, I would suspect that you all have supervisors perhaps to indicate what you need to collect, but you can also take a read at what is available online from your RCMP in regards to those things. So if we take a look at slide 23, slide 23 shows the difference between policies and procedures. I'm just going to explain the two first, and then as I'm explaining them, I'm going to pop the question. I'll pop the question in here while I'm explaining them to give you a chance to think about it. So there is a difference between a policy and a procedure. So a policy is basically telling you, giving it some guidance about how things should work. It's, think of it like a rule or something that has to happen. And the procedure explains how that is carried out. So a policy is a bigger piece, and then the procedure is the steps that make that policy happen. So I'm going to spin the wheel. You can pop an answer into this question, but if a policy outlines the rules and the procedure explains how to carry them out, what's an example? And I'm going to just spin the wheel, and we'll see who the lucky person is this time. I've taken Kamenopic out, so we only have a few people left. So while you're thinking of the answer, and again, feel free to pass if you prefer to. So Melanie, you're the lucky winner of this question. Would you like to unmute and then let us know if you have any examples of a policy and just one procedure that might go with that? And I have a feeling, let me just check, I might have muted you myself.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Oh, there you go, I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay, so for policy, for example, now I can just think about it, how you, I can't think of the word right now, how we behave among each other, there is a word for it, help me out here. How we act at workplace, how we call that piece of policies that everyone has to sign also.
Yeah, so I work with Red Cross, and we have something called a standards of behavior that everybody signs, and it identifies what professional behavior is.
Yeah, so like, you know, how we work with conflict within the team, but also towards clients or visitors, and then conduct. Yes, thank you. I was looking for that. Okay, so and then for procedures, it's more like I'm thinking, for example, of a front desk. There are certain procedures in place on how to do certain things here in the house. What we have to do in the morning when we come to the rec center, how close up is working, certain things of how we file certain event bookings, what is the procedure to do event bookings, what belongs all to this event setup, all these kind of things. These are procedures. I have procedures in place where I trying to put procedures in place to also have not too much overlap between departments, so everyone is kind of in their field and helps each other out when needed. So it's more clear what everyone has to do, rather than everyone sort of trying to do everything. It can become really chaotic, and there was no procedures in place over here, so I'm trying to actually put something in place right now to have a smoother work environment here with our staff and, you know, and just events running and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So you're, just to come back to what you started with, your policy might be all staff behave professionally, and your procedure might be you welcome people when they come in at the front because that's where your front desk is. You know, you answer questions, like those sorts of things. So the code of conduct could be the overall policy about how you behave with the public, and then some of the procedures could be ways to identify exactly what that looks like. Deanne, I'm going to ask you to unmute and share the rule of two, because that is a sport thing that's come in through Safe Sport, but there's quite a big interest from recreation to look at how the rule of two might apply to recreation. So could you unmute and just explain the rule of two? I think that's a really good example of a policy, and then perhaps tell us what the procedures are that go along with that.
So the rule of two is whenever we are working with any of the youth, so two adults must be present all the time, right? And the rule also says it's all about the safe sports. So let's say we're going to go for any tournament or any event. So like as a coach, I'm an adult, I can't be one-to-one with the athlete. Two, let's say athlete is going washroom or anywhere, so two adults must be present all the time. You can't take the kid with while you're driving by yourself. So whenever you're talking on the phone or something, so two adults on the chat must be involved in too. So as a coach, like I'm an adult coach, and I can't chat one-to-one with the athlete, right? So that's the rule of two is it's all about the safety of the athletes and the youth. And yeah, and to follow the procedure to do that is either you are in a situation where like the public gathering is there or cameras are there or two adults are involved, like team manager or the coach is involved or another volunteer is involved in that. So that's the procedure we follow to do the policy, apply the policy over that. Does it make sense?
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that. I did want to raise that because some of you who promote Arctic Winter Games in your communities might have noticed that some of the ways that the Arctic Winter Games are going to take place have changed because of the rule of two. So there's actually going to be more adults going with a team and less youth going because of the rule of two. So that rule has been adopted across Canada. In Nunavut, you'll see that under Safe Sport, and it's a little different. Hasn't been implemented quite as strongly in MWT and Yukon yet as Nunavut, but it will guide also selection for Arctic Winter Games. So thanks for that. Sorry, go ahead.
Kurt, whenever anybody is going, like you're going for the Canada Winter Games or you're going for any of the event, even like Arctic Winter Games we're going this year, so you must have to do the course, the safe sport for all. This is compulsory for all the team managers, all the coaches, and whoever going with the team as an adult. Yeah.
Yeah, so some of you, like Nathan and Kumanoff, you guys mentioned running summer day camp. And Melanie, I know you're running a lot of programs. So just how you run your programs, you might, I'm not saying you have to follow the rule of two, but it might be a consideration as you're moving forward. It's a good risk management tool. So thank you very much. Kumanoff has mentioned in here, a policy tells you what to do or not what to do, like equipment. And so the example I had was actually a squash example from last time. And using safety glasses while you're playing squash might be the policy, and the procedure is what you do if somebody doesn't follow that rule. So they're not allowed to play, or you loan them a pair of glasses, or you give them a warning or something. I don't know exactly what it is, but that's just an equipment example. So there you go, Kuminopic as well. Like if you're using the hockey arena, right, you use gates. You don't go on there with your dirty boots from outside. There's just something. So policies and procedures are pretty challenging. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry for interrupting you. Can I add four words to what John said about the policy of two?
Sorry, say that again?
Can I add a few more words about that policy of two?
Sure. How about if I find the link to it and I send it back, or do you have a pretty quick question?
Just a quick one, because Jan mentioned we should be two adults and one athlete. Also, it is acceptable if there is one adult and two athletes. So it's vice versa, not all the time two adults and one mother or one athlete. It's also one adult or chaperone and minimum of two athletes. That's it.
Yeah, I have to reread it. So, Dion, maybe can you, if you're on the computer, Dion, maybe you could just look it up and put a link to it, maybe a national, like Sport Canada link or something. That would be great.
Sure thing. Yeah.
Okay. Just about the rule of two, and then we can come back to that, because there is no rule for recreation right now. It's a sport rule, Igor, but, you know, it's just something to point out because it's a new rule under the safe sport that's just coming into effect. So we'll clarify that. Thanks for the question. So policies and procedures can be complicated. Some of the topics that you might need to create a policy for and procedures are introduced on slides 24 to 27. So if you have the slides open, slide 24 talks about training and certification. So I'm going to ask, this is a double question, and we just have three people left. So somebody's going to maybe get put on the spot, but again, say pass if you need to. So my question to you is, what's the difference between training and certification, and why is that important? So that's in the chat, and then Jan's popped an answer to Igor in there. So let me spin my wheel and see who the lucky person is. And Deanne, I took you out because you also answered the rule of two. And remember, feel free to pass if you're not sure what the answer to this is. So Misha, do you have any idea? You're the lucky person. Do you have any idea what the difference is between training and certification, or what? How would you explain the two?
So, I mean, I did take a look at the slide, but I mean, maybe would say like training is kind of a softer way of improving your skills in the workplace, or maybe like an unofficial way, whereas certification is like it's kind of hard to explain. I would say like training is, I don't want to say unofficial, but is a softer way of like improving your skills in the workplace, whereas certification is like kind of like the harder scope of it, where you like get the document and you can take leadership with that task, I guess.
Yeah, so it's important to understand the two, because sometimes you might have an obligation to provide training for somebody on the job. So there might be things like Melanie mentioned, a code of conduct and professional behavior. That's not really something we have a certification for, but because you're expecting your staff to behave in that way, Melanie, you might want to make sure that they have some training. So not everybody knows how to behave professionally. Not everybody knows how to talk to the public, things like that. training also might be training that's a requirement, and some things that are a requirement come with a certificate and some don't. So certification actually is a type of evidence that you've met a standard at a certain point in time. So imagine with first aid, so I'm also a Red Cross master instructor trainer, so we talk about this a lot, is that a first aid certificate says that as of the date that it was issued, that person meets a certain knowledge base and can demonstrate certain skills. Not really any assurance that a year from now or 2 years from now they can do that. And that's usually why certification lets you sort of have to usually be redone. So Nathan's popped in an example about lifeguard training as well. So that's another really good example. Aquatics is a huge one where training is important, and so is certification, especially from a risk management perspective. And no worries about the levels, Nathan. It's just if you have aquatics facility that requires certain, you will be required to have certain levels of certification. And if you have staff that are not trained and certified, you're going to have to make sure they get the training and the certification. But things like professional conduct, cleaning your recreation facility, things like that might be things that you identify as training. And so in your documentation, what you might want to do is you might want to list who needs the training, what type of training is needed, when certification is required from a risk management perspective, and also when and how the training takes place. So another example, how many of you remember being in a school or a building and they have a fire alarm, right? Because they, not because there's a fire, but because they're practicing that fire drill. So all schools are required to have fire drills, which is a type of training, not only for the school, but also for the kids. So just think of the difference between training and certification. Hi, Nikki, I see you just jumped on the call. So we're going through a range of questions. I have like a spinning wheel with people's names there. So I won't put you on the spot right now. I'll let you jump in next time around. So I'd like to move on then from training and certification and have a conversation a little bit. This is a big one in the North about alcohol, perhaps. Alcohol, and we also now have the legalization of cannabis as well. Melanie, you got a question? Go ahead.
Okay, so we have a real problem here to get instructors to Walton Lake because it's in the middle of nowhere, and it's super expensive, and then if you wanted to do something long-term, then we have no possibility to have someone here long-term to give, let's say, a weekly classes. And I was wondering, can, like, for example, just simple fitness classes for seniors or you know, adults, is this possible to do this without certification? Or do you have to have a fitness instructor certification? Is that a must? I'm not clear about that.
Yeah, so fitness is one where there is national and also provincial territorial certification. You're probably taking a pretty big risk if you're running a class without that type of certification. Think about an example that was shared in the Yukon. Those of you from outside the Yukon, it's kind of a cool example. Somebody in Dawson City wanted to offer pole dancing, so you can probably imagine in your mind what pole dancing is like. There's a bit of risk with pole dancing. You have people hanging from these poles and doing different things. So what she did is she offered the class with an instructor from somewhere down south through a big video screen. I know that Old Crow has done that with yoga as well. I'm not saying don't offer the class with somebody who's not certified, but you need to talk to perhaps your supervisor and find out where it stands as far as risk management, because it's the risk that if somebody gets injured, would you be considered somewhat liable for not having had a certified instructor when a certification is available?
But then even the Zoom classes, there needs to be somebody in the classroom that can take care of people, or no?
You could have a leader that has first aid and things like that. So that's one way around it. For things like aquatics, it's very clear that you can't rent a pool and you can't offer swimming lessons without people with certification. And for ice making, there's certifications there that are a lot stricter since they had the issues in Fernie. Other places like Holly, I imagine for you guys, there's probably some certifications that need to be in place before doing fitness with elders and seniors too. It's a tough answer. The answer is don't be the one to make the decision. Have somebody above you make that decision. And make sure that you cover the risks of injury in some other way. So physiotherapy in the Yukon, you could reach out to chronic conditions as well. So there's a tip from Nikki. So Nikki, do you want to unmute and just explain that?
Yes, she didn't. She is, however, certified as a first aid instructor, so I don't know if that helped her case, but she didn't have to get certified as a fitness instructor to teach these classes. But this is also the same program I'd mentioned that NRHA would health screen the participants before they can join. So if they have a condition that could easily be made worse with the exercise, then they'll get declined for it. As for getting certified, she didn't have to do anything. She just teaches what they give her.
Yeah, and one of the risk management things would be making sure that they're printed off and kept in, the documentation's kept in the date of the lesson plans or the plans and things like that, too. Holly, did you have something to add? Because I know you guys are working with a high-risk population.
Yeah, so when we do our programs, like Pride, for example, we had volunteers come to run the program for us. But then during the pandemic, we would actually do the Tai Chi activity and do what the instructor taught us. But normally now we pair with physiotherapy and they actually tell us what each individual resident needs for exercise on top of our regular programs we have, like resistance training and Tai Chi and yoga, etc.
That's great. So you're still accessing some type of support to make sure that it works. So, Kelsey, who you work with, is accessing that support through a different organization. Holly, you're accessing it through the PTs. Melanie, you could reach out to chronic conditions. And if you need the person there, I can pass. Melanie Tate is the one there. She was at the recreation gathering. And so there might be ways around accessing that, like just make sure that you cover the risk off in other ways. And we'll talk about this more in our next learning event when we get into legal risk. Okay, so let's move on. I'd like to just have a little bit of a conversation about alcohol or cannabis. So my question, and I've only got two people left in the chat. So the question would be, or in the spinny wheel thing, what type of documentation do you have that's related to alcohol or related to cannabis? And the two are somewhat related but also somewhat different because of the legislation. So let me just share my screen and show you who gets to answer this time. We're down to Igor and Nathan. So let's spin it. Okay, Nathan, we're going to put you on the hot seat unless you feel like you don't want to. Oh, There we go. Unless you feel like you want to pass on that question. But do you guys, how many paper policies around alcohol?
I haven't really seen anything. It's just those, what do you call them? Like, you know, don't smoke in front of the buildings. We had to put up these cannabis, no smoking signs, no vaping all over the public recreation center. But I haven't seen any paperwork or documentation except for public service announcements. But it's still too brand new for us. Like, I don't really think there's anything for Baker.
Yeah, with the cannabis, you kind of have to follow the roles and responsibilities of the legislation of your territory. So it's different from each province and territory. In some of them, consumption in public spaces is the same as tobacco, but in other jurisdictions, it's restricted to to private homes. So Manitoba has very strict legislation, I think, about cannabis, whereas some of the other ones, like perhaps Alberta, are a little bit more open. So that's what I know about cannabis. And then I see a couple of chats in here around in the chat about liquor. So Nisha said a liquor license, yes. And Nikki, I see you popped something in the chat going nice and fast. Nikki, when you say under the city of Flin Flon, does that mean that anything that you run has alcohol under the city's like rules?
For any of our recreation facilities, like, we have our facility booking agreement where they give us their information and what they want, because we have, like, equipment rentals and also, like, things that can go with each facility. So when we have that, we also have included in there, like, zero tolerance for alcohol, smoking cannabis within the buildings. Alcohol is permitted as long as you present an appropriate liquor license for that event, and you have to have it up, like, visible to, in case the inspector came in, pretty much.
Yeah, so those are all rules around what you guys do, like how it works and stuff like that. And you mentioned, like, sort of users and posting things. So we will, one of the slides is about user agreements. And that might be something, especially if people are using your facilities for weddings or special events or things. So you might want to specify how late they can, following a liquor license, number of people. Like, there might be different things that come into play. Tumanopic has popped in the chat that you guys have a poster that has a buffer zone. So that it identifies not just drinking or smoking, but also vaping within X number of meters. So that's another type of documentation that you could use for that. And Holly said people need to probably have a doctor's note, yeah, because you're responsible for your residents. And you might, if you're serving alcohol once a week, I'm not sure about your liquor license, somebody obviously is serving it would know about that. Nisha, did you have a question or a comment too?
Yeah, I have a question. So, you know, like, I noticed that the rec center in Carmack, they, like, have nothing about vaping. And I'm wondering if you can still implement that rule of, like, you can't vape, you know, 5 meters from an entrance, even if it's not, like, legally. Like, can you still make that, like, a local law?
Well, if you think about it, I think it would have to go through your mayor and council or your SAO or something like that. I don't know the exact answer. But from my perspective, I would think a recreation facility or your facilities are public spaces that you want to promote as being healthy. And so if you need to do rules that are over and above maybe what your community rules are, then, for, you know, I don't know if anyone's had any experience.
Probably they go into, like, a bylaw, maybe.
Yeah, or something like that. So you'd have to sort of, I think that would be on a case-by-case basis. And probably the rationale for that would be this is supposed to be a healthy space, that we're promoting healthy lifestyles. So we're going above and beyond what the local laws are. That would be my guess. I'm not an expert in any of these areas at all. So my answer from a risk management perspective is ask your supervisor and figure it out. But if something's really, really important to you, if something's the law, like alcohol or cannabis use, you need to follow your local laws. But also, if you need to supersede those laws or do something that might not be a law, then make sure that you've got good rationale behind that and develop a policy or policies and procedure. So you can, in activity 4, I've created a little bit of a book, like an online book, and there's some audio links in there so you can listen to a little bit more if you need to. I see we're coming towards the end of our call, so I just wanted to touch on, because I still have Igor in my spinning wheel. And my next question is about travel. So as you know, travel poses a high risk for us, whether we're in the north or northern communities or remote areas, particularly in the winter, which is one of the reasons I wanted to know how cold it was in your communities today. So as slide 26 shows, policies about participant travel and staff travel should be separate. They shouldn't be the same policy. And remember, a travel policy will outline what, and the travel procedure will describe how. So here's my question, and Igor, I'm going to put you on the spot for this one. And what type of procedures might be either part of a travel policy for participants or a travel policy for staff? So I know many of you also deal with travel, especially if you're like in Nunavut or a remote community. So feel free to also pop an answer in there if you'd like to. So Igor, any thoughts about travel policies for participants and staff and how those might be carried out?
Yeah, I would mention, for example, we have to have a number of chaperones accompanying, for example, a group of youth, athlete youth participants, and the procedure deals with how we choose those chaperones and what criteria do we use in order to choose chaperones, people with good motor, because it is our future and we all want for them to be protected from any kind of impact from the outside. The other thing, I think we have the policy also mentions the driver and what kind of license a driver should have. And also
you're starting to cut out, Igor, sorry. Okay, I think Igor, you're cutting out.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yeah, and you were talking about the...
Yes, I was talking about that, and that is how we take into consideration the type of the car and then go from there. Also about the travel plans, also we have that included in our policy. And behind travel plans, we deal with how much in advance we should know our plan and how to go from there.
That's great. Thank you. So you can see that if you have travel policies for participants, they might be one thing, and the procedures will outline how you follow that policy. And for staff, there'll be something else. So we're at the end of our first hour. As you guys remember, the second hour is an opportunity to stay on the line, ask more questions, take a look at the required learning activity for the week. I do want to encourage you to look at the slides that I didn't have a chance to cover off, cold weather. I think most people are familiar with cold weather policy. And make sure that it's not just, as we found out today, the temperature, but also the wind chill, too, can make a difference. Checklists are also listed, and checklists are, there can be in range. Like, there can be ones about occasional and routine facility and equipment inspections, ones about how you clean a bathroom, ones about what you put in your car, maybe not for you guys in Nunavut, but for us in NWC and Yukon, what you put in your car before you travel to another community, those sorts of things. Slide 29 also introduces user agreements. So really important to think about those and to make sure that, if at all possible, whoever's using your facility also has their own insurance. And we will talk about that in our next advanced learning event. So I did have one last question, but I'm not going to ask it, just for you to reflect on, is changes in documentation for managing risk that you've noticed in the past few years. So just, you know, those of you who've been doing this for a while will probably have noticed that we're ending up with more documentation, but it's still important, as you showed me in your required learning activities from last week, to keep things pretty simple. So some of you, like Melanie, I liked how you took your guidelines and made pictures instead to try and keep it simple. You know, Kumanalpik, you just shared a checklist that was like half a page long. So really great to think that we have a lot of documentation, but let's not make it too complicated. So this wraps up our second and our last conference call for RM102. Please make sure that you do all the activities and check out the Explore More section before you do your last required learning activity. And that last required learning activity asks you to create a new piece of documentation for operations or revise an old one. So I'd like you to, if you're going to share something that you already use, I'd like to see you improve it so that it addresses what we've been talking about. Make sure that you choose something that reduces risks related to the delivery of recreation. So Melanie, I had a little bit of feedback for you on your poster, and Nathan and Kumanalpik, I just wanted to chat to you guys too about your last required learning activities to make sure that we're fitting what the instructions and guidelines are. So when you posted your documentation for operations in the forum, please explain why it's an important risk management tool. And then we have our feedback form in Activity 7. And then next week is your catch-up week. So there is no conference call on Wednesday next week. So merci, Joe, merci, Kwanik, thank you very much for joining today. If you'd like to stay on the call, I invite you to do so. And if you need to run off to work, meetings, lunch, you're more than welcome to sign off as soon as you want. So Nathan and Kumanalpik, if you guys have 2 minutes, I just wanted to touch base with you on your activities from last week. And anyone else is welcome to stay on the call too.